Welcome everyone to Creating a Family, talk about adoption and foster care. I'm Dawn Davenport. I am the host of this show, but I am also the executive director at Creating a Family. We are the national adoption and foster care education and support nonprofit, and we create resources for you. And those resources you can find at our website, creatingafamily.org. Today, we're going to be talking about blending kids by both birth and adoption in the same family. Blending kids, combining kids, or in other words, families that have both children by birth and children by adoption. We will be talking with Rebecca Ricardo. She is a licensed clinical social worker who has worked in the field of adoption since 1991. She currently serves as an executive director for a licensed child placing agency that provides both placement and support services. She is also an adoptee and the birth mom to a son she placed for adoption, and he was raised as the only adopted child between two children born to his adoptive parents. So she's got both personal experience as well as experience from the professional side. So welcome, Rebecca, to Creating a Family.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You know, I didn't think to ask you, but as an adopted child or as an adopted person, did your family have children by birth as well as by adoption in the family you were raised in?
No, I was raised in a family of four children who were all adopted, all from separate birth parents. So none of us are biologically related.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Well, I was just hoping to really score the amazing. That would be more
would
than
have been a
trifecta.
Nice addition, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that would have been. That have been. I don't know what that quadrifecta or something. That's not a word. Well, suffice it to say that we actually know that this surprises people, some people, that how common it is for children in the same family for a family to have both children by birth and adoption. And we know that because there's a large national, it's called the National Survey of Family Growth. It's a large federal government funded survey of families. And through that survey, we know that this is actually far more common than people expect. So let's talk a little about some of the typical reasons why families would have both an adopted and non-adopted kids. I'll let you start. So I'll think of any that if you haven't thought of some of them.
Sure. So we see it runs the gamut of sometimes it's families who have had a child or one or two children by birth and then are experiencing secondary infertility, and yet they want to add to their family. They want to grow their family. Sometimes families have started out with adoption, believing they could not achieve pregnancy, and then they do. And then we have families who, you know, it's sort of the altruistic, we have something to offer a child who might be in need of a permanent family, and they are interested in growing their family and expanding their family. And know that there are children waiting in care that might need them. And I would say the final thing that we've come across is sometimes a mom knows a family when she's pregnant and she's thinking about placing, and she wants to place with them. And they might not have ever thought that they were going to become adoptive parents, might not have even been looking for this opportunity, but a mom that they know and that they have a connection with has reached out to them and asked if they might consider this. So I think that covers most of what we've seen at our organization.
And I'll throw, this is just a kind of a subset of one you already mentioned, but we see it a fair amount. And that is a family that initially experiences infertility and chooses adoption rather than treatment, or went into treatment and it was not successful. But treatments have improved. And sometimes families didn't seek fertility treatment, or sometimes they couldn't afford fertility treatment. And then something changes. They get a job where their insurance covers fertility treatment, or they are in a more financially stable position, or for whatever reason, they go back into treatment after adoption. We actually see that a fair amount. And it's become more common as more insurance companies start covering infertility. And there haven't been huge advances in the treatment of infertility, but certainly if you go back 10 years or so, that there have been some advances. So those are some other, that's a subset of one of the reasons that you had mentioned.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. One of the things that we always try to do when when it's available and when we can, is to include research. And I'm fascinated by research in general, as listeners will know, and people who've taken our courses know, we are really interested in bringing being the bridge between the research community and the parent or the professional community. And there is a theory out there that says that parents would have a tendency to favor biological kids. It's actually got a name. It's called the kin selection theory, and it's a type of evolutionary psychology. And so they speculate, scientists and researchers will speculate from an evolutionary standpoint, that it's logical to predict that parents would favor their biologically related children over their adopted children. This, as I said, it's called the kin selection theory. And that would also say that parents would have a less favorable perception of the behavior traits of adopted kids compared to their biological kids. Now, needless to say, as you probably would expect, there hasn't been a robust body of research on this topic, but there is some. And there is, believe it or not, a journal called the Journal of Evolution and Human Behavior. And we were able to find a couple of studies in there. And both studies found that we were able to find did not show that parents favored biological children over adopted kids, which I think is reassuring. Now, I have to acknowledge that the sample size is not huge. This is not an easy thing to study. But there are two studies at least, and there are probably more, that would indicate that, in fact, parents don't favor a biological child. Does this sit with what you see, Rebecca, or is this a surprise to you?
It's not a surprise to me, and I suspect that the research is valid to the extent that it probably, you know, hasn't had a large sample size. But I would also submit that I think parents certainly, if they're the reporters in the research, would accurately report that they don't feel that they have treated their children mm-hmm. differently. But I would submit that the children might give a different bit of feedback. So while I think parents might be trying their best to not do things differently or favor one over the other, I think that I've certainly heard from loads of adoptees who felt that there was a difference, even if their parents were genuinely trying not to, that they experienced it as it was. So I do think that the research would need to factor that in.
Mm-hmm. I think it's a valid point.
You know, the perspective of what an adoptive parent thought they were trying to do versus how the children experienced it, and not just the adoptee, but the children by birth. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is so timely. I don't know if you watched This Is Us last night, but that show last night was all about this and how those two brothers experienced growing up together with very different perceptions of how they were being treated in the family. And who was being treated special and for what reason. So I think that that's just a great example of children experiencing different than the way parents thought they were handling it.
That is such a good point. And I also think that we have to factor in that there are definitely, through biology, we do definitely know that there are heritable, some parts of our temperament and our personality. There is a genetic component. And so it is likely to assume that children by birth who share the genetics of their parents might have more similarities. It would be an assumption that I think would be illogical to say they would be more similar to their parents. Now, sometimes that makes for a more complicated parenting relationship because we see things in our kids that annoys in ourselves, therefore annoys us in our kids. But it also, though, I think just as logically would say that we understand, are we a child who loves music and we love music? Our children might perceive it, we might not perceive it as favoritism, but we have something more in common. Or a child who is athletic and we are athletic, or a child who is bookish and we are bookish. So there are the similarities that genetically are outgoing versus introspective or whatever. And that an adopted kid coming in might be more different. And that mm-hmm. lends itself to the perception, either through the child or through the parent, of favoritism, because there's just a lack of as tight a fit, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I would say, you know, I know that my son's experience in his family, included feeling very loved and accepted and a part of the family, but that his personality and his interests and likes were very different from his siblings, who seemed to lean more towards being very similar to their parents. Mm-hmm. And so there's sort of no way around that, right? You know, yeah, I mean, there's right. No way for his parents to have suddenly equaled that all out. Mm-hmm. All they can do is be parents who can appreciate all that their children bring, whether it's a similarity that feels familiar to them and they can recognize it and say, that's like me, or whether it's a child who, that's nothing like me, and yet I can still value and appreciate that in mm-hmm. that child. And I think then when parents can do that, when they have children by birth and adoption, that's kind of the best that they can do, because there's no way to say, I can magically make you all feel exactly the same to me. You know, that's impossible.
And we'll come around to talking about that treating our children the same is a fool's errand, and probably either not, both not good and not achievable. All right, but we'll come to that. That's a tease for further on.
It is.
Yeah. So do you think it matters if the, and from what you've seen, if the adopted child is adopted after the family has bio kids, or if the adopted child comes first, most often because the parents were infertile, and then they went back into treatment or just naturally conceived without mm-hmm. treatment for a biological child? And what factors do you think influence your response as to whether it matters if the adopted child was first or after the fact?
Well, I'm going to say that it matters, but it might not matter for the reason that you might have asked the question.
Okay.
So it matters. It matters because it matters, because how children come into family, birth order, what their story is, how they joined the family matters. And so it's always going to be something that needs some attention. I don't know that we've seen anything in our work that would lend itself to say it's always better if the adopted child comes first, or it's always better if you have children by birth first. There's just no way that it's ever, I think, that will ever be that conclusive. I think it matters because it matters how children join families. It matters how parents treat that story. And it matters how parents tend to the feelings and thoughts of how kids are feeling about that. So, you know, talking to a child who joined your family through adoption that you're now pregnant and going to give birth means you've got to put some time and attention into helping that child understand, my love for you doesn't shift and change. My love for this child will be different, but not less than, not worse than. And in reverse, we're adding to our family through adoption, not because we didn't like the children we gave birth to, you know, I mean, it's like really allaying children's fears about, so what does it mean that we're choosing to do this differently mm-hmm. this time around, however the children started. So mm-hmm. that's why I think it matters, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter in the sense that there's one way to go over the other.
Okay. And we've talked some about the favoritism of the perceived favoritism of parents, but we also will often hear of concerns that parents feel that their extended family, grandparents, might favor the biological children mm-hmm. over the adopted kids. Is that an issue that you have seen?
It is. And I'll tell you where I've seen it is I run a support group for adult adoptees, and adult adoptees coming in and speaking about their experiences at, for instance, one story, it's just heartbreaking, about a family reunion where a grandmother was going to bestow upon her grandchildren these family heirlooms, and did this in front of everyone at a family reunion, except for the two children who joined the family through adoption. And literally said, well, because you're not really family. And devastating to experience
imagine.
It was devastating. So we do know different generation, different understanding of adoption. People have different thoughts. So, you know, we are very intentional with our families that the training we're giving them, the education that they're receiving as they're working with us, really important for that to spread that around to the family, mm-hmm. really important to have open, honest conversation with extended family about expectations for unconditional love and acceptance of all the children, and a zero tolerance when they see family members do things differently, treat differently, say different things, of not just saying, oh, well, that's just Aunt Betty being mm-hmm. Aunt Betty, you know, really having to be strong enough to advocate and say, that's not okay that you treated my children differently, mm-hmm. or that they are being singled out or separated or not dealt with in the same way, that is incumbent upon parents to tend to that mm-hmm. and not just say to the child, oh, well, you know, we love you, so don't worry about what she said, because that will not be enough. It needs mm-hmm. strong advocacy, and it needs zero tolerance to allow that to happen. But it will happen. And we have seen it happen in family after family. So it needs time and attention for sure.
And time and attention beforehand to anticipate whether it's going to be a problem. State your expectations beforehand with your extended family, if you think that that's even a possibility, so that as much as possible, we can prevent it. That's because, as you point out, that story is horrible.
It is.
Let me pause for just a moment to see if you are enjoying what you're hearing so far. We are so excited to let you know about more content similar to this, thanks to the Jackie Bean Family Foundation. They have provided some free courses. These are parenting courses that are directly relevant to you as a parent. An example of one free course that they provide is a course on the 7 core issues in adoption and foster care, a really strong course. There are 5 free courses, and to get to them, you would go to this website. It's a shortened link, so it's bit.ly/JBFsupport, and that is all caps. And the courses are free. You will, when you go there, you will see that there is a charge. However, when you go to check out, if you enter this coupon code, your course will be free. And the coupon code is all cap JBF Strong. And thank you to the Jackie Bean Family Foundation. Another issue, and I think this one will take some people by surprise, and that is the and I speak from as a parent of a blended family, that I found that we downplayed the genetics and birth stories of our children by birth because we didn't have those same stories or the same genetics of our children by adoption. And so it surprised me when I realized that it wasn't a conscious thing. But I definitely realized that we were doing that at some point. Let's talk a little about that. And is that a fair thing for your children by birth? But on the other hand, you don't want to make your children by adoption feel that they are lesser than by not having these stories or genetics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, there's an interesting parallel to that. When I read that question, I thought, you know, the other way in which this comes up is when families adopt more than one child and have really different open mm-hmm. contact arrangements.
Very much so.
That they struggle with, how do I manage that when one kid has this happening with their birth family and this other mm-hmm. kid doesn't? It's a very similar dynamic. Mm-hmm. And we certainly have seen some families who have, you know, erred on the side of promoting tending to the adoptees' feelings to the detriment of their children by birth. Uh-huh. And so, you know, as with all things, balance, really listening and paying attention and being a tuned-in parent to all your kids to notice if, has that been hurtful that we aren't spending a lot of time talking about that? Or do those kids understand why we're doing that? Do they have enough empathy and understanding to say, no, I get it. We can't be sitting there talking about the day I was born when my brother doesn't know anything about the day he was born. Or vice versa, can the child through adoption understand, it's okay, you have your story, let's talk about it. I wish I had mine. I don't. But that shouldn't mean you shouldn't have to talk about yours. That, if a family can create that situation with their kids, that's really the healthiest thing you can get to. But you have to work at that, and you have to put information out there and then check it out. How's that feeling for people? What are people thinking about that? Are you understanding within our family why we have these differences? And again, it's cliche, but it's true, of really trying to say different does not mean less than and worse than. It simply mm-hmm. means different. It simply means that we have different factors, different things to take into account. So I think when if families can catch themselves, which it sounds like you did, you caught yourself with, oh, I think we're actually, you know, not saying enough to our kids by birth about their stories. Mm-hmm. There's always an opportunity to fix and tweak and come back. Mm-hmm. We try to teach our parents all the time, you know, be humble about your parenting so that you can come back to your kids and say, you know what? I'm not sure I handled that right. Mm-hmm. I'd like to try again. I want to try to, you know, see if it feels better for all of us if we handle it this way and shift and pivot and do different. You know, it's a great thing to model for our children.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
I mean, we really sometimes I think as parents think we're supposed to show our kids that we can handle everything and we've got it all down pat. But kids need modeling for how to handle when you've made a mistake, too. So or when you've learned and you've grown and you have access to new information. How do you make use of that differently? That I think that really helps, too. But we have certainly seen families who, you know, sort of got all caught up in all the education around adoption, because when you give birth to children, you don't get all these classes that you get through adoption.
Now, maybe
right?
I've often thought we should, but no, we don't.
Agreed. Yeah. Agreed. Mm-hmm. But so I think a lot of families really embrace it and buy into it. And they're like, oh, I've learned so much. And so then they're literally parenting all their kids as if they've all been adopted, forgetting that there's always going to be different needs depending on how your children joined your family. So I think that's what drives some of that too.
And that leads into my next question, which is not always, but sometimes the kids, especially if our kids who joined our family have experienced trauma before joining our family, they often either have more challenging behaviors or they certainly have more appointments. They may have greater learning challenges. And so they, in essence, just require more time. And that's can be perceived by outsiders as well as within the family itself of favoritism. And it's a challenge from a parent standpoint to know this child is, how do I balance? And it's not always the adopted child that is requiring more time, but it often is.
Yeah. And, you know, it's conversation. I feel like this is what we're always talking to our families about. But it is it's a part of assessing families when they're first coming to you, you know, how will you handle this? If your child that you now have through adoption has some significant needs because of trauma history, that's going to take a lot of your time and attention, and your children by birth are noticing that and experiencing that as mom or dad don't have time for me anymore, or mom and dad don't choose to spend time with me anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. Again, we have to put some thought into that ahead of time. Families need to consider, how will I manage that? Where will I be able to make room for all my kids? Because you have to be able to meet the needs of all your children. You can't suddenly stop meeting the needs of your kids by birth in order to tend to the child you've adopted. Mm-hmm. So it's a part of the assessment, should be a part of the assessment. Social workers should be paying a lot of attention in having that conversation with parents. And if the child's old enough, with the child who's already in the home, of putting out scenarios. What if? you really thought mom was going to be able to take you to go get ice cream and your new brother or sister has had a meltdown and now needs mom's focus and attention. How are you going to feel? Mm-hmm. What will you say? What will you do? that needs to be a part of how we're helping people prepare to do this. And sometimes families need to think it through to such an extent that it causes them to change their mind about adoption. And that's okay. I think we have worked with some families where when we put out enough scenarios about, hey, we've seen this thing happen. We've seen this thing happen. How would you handle that? How would you handle it? We get parents who come back and say, you know what? The more I think about it, I'm not sure I can handle that. In which case, good. Then we should not proceed, because why set yourself up for failure if you already come into this with the belief, I don't think I can do that.
And maybe it's not best for your family to do that. I mean, that's the other thing. Yeah.
Right.
I mean,
and, you know, normalizing that for people, that even though you have a strong desire to do this, once you have the knowledge and information about what this will really mean for your family, it's okay to say, oh, now maybe this isn't the right decision for us.
Yeah. We say that to people who are thinking about fostering as well.
Yeah. I mean, we just recently diverted a family to a mentoring program because as we were talking with them through the assessment process, they have a very young child at home. They were interested in adopting much older kids. And we started talking about vulnerable children, kids who act out impulsively, not necessarily intentionally trying to harm, but certainly there are kids that do intentionally harm because of their own trauma history and a child's vulnerable. And they sort of got this, oh, we might not really be able to protect our child who's already in the home as well as we'd like to. And so we said, you know what, why don't you join this mentoring program that'll have you working alongside foster parents, working alongside kids who are in the system, get a better sense of those kids. And then maybe this is something you do when your child's a little older. And, you know, that's fine. Like, come back to us. We'd be happy to have you. Sadly, we will always have kids in foster care. So, and I think that's going to work well for them. And I think they're going to be in a much better place when they do come back to us. And I really do think they will come back in a couple of years.
And I do think that parents have to think of the needs of the children in the family, existing in the family, before whatever decision they're going to make.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And they need to consider, even under normal circumstances, whatever that looks like, your time and attention will be pulled away from the child who's currently in your home. And so a shift is going to change in your family dynamic. Mm-hmm. And you have to put some thought into that. Mm-hmm. And be really clear about how you intend to manage it.
So now I want to spend some time talking about just that. How are some ways to manage it? And I want to divide this tip section into kind of three general things. One, general tips. Then the second one I want to talk about is tips for when you already have a child by birth and are considering adoption. And then lastly, tips for when you have a biological child after you have adopted. The adopted kids came first. So let's start, and I'll start with the general tip because I've already mentioned it, and that is I don't think it's necessary or even possible to treat all children equally, but I think it is very important to treat them fairly according to their needs. Easier said than done, I will acknowledge, but I think that it's a myth that we all fall into at times, is that of equality, that we've got to treat them the same.
Mm-hmm. It really is an issue of equity, not equality. You know, equity is about giving everyone what they need to succeed, which doesn't mean that everyone needs the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, which of course is a relevant conversation these days. We are all talking about equity versus equality and what the differences are. And within family systems, it is absolutely true. Fair is the better word to use. I like that you use that. And that parents need to be clear with their kids that every one of you has different needs. And as your parent, my job is to assess each individual person's unique needs and parent to those needs. So yes, it will look different with some kids than others. And that's okay. I think that was a cultural myth and stereotype that we all got caught up in somewhere, I don't know, 40s or 50s probably, of all children had to be treated the same. And the truth is, if you have multiple children by birth, they're all unique, different people.
Absolutely.
You know, they have unique, different needs. So, for me, it feels like fair and equity is the much better way to talk about that than equal.
So can you think of a general tip that would apply regardless of whether the adopted child comes first or the child by birth comes first?
I think open conversation, really getting comfortable with open conversation about uniqueness, needs, differences. The more that parents can be comfortable talking to their children about why they're doing what they're doing with each individual child, I think it eliminates a lot of this stuff because it makes things clear. It puts clear expectations out there. You know, if a child's sitting around going, well, you just treat her this way because she's adopted, or you like her better because you gave birth to her, you can nip all that with just clear conversation and repeated clear conversation. So the other thing that's a general tip is we don't talk about this once and it's done, ever. I mean, adoption's a lifelong issue. It means a lifelong conversation. We have to keep tending to this at each new developmental stage, as your child has new capacities to understand, as relationships ebb and flow, it all needs conversation over and over and over again. So
yeah,
consistently talking about it.
And I think there's another corollary to that is that parents will sometimes say, well, the kids aren't bringing it up, so it's not a problem. And that is a fallacy as well, that it's our job to bring things up, because some kids are going to bring up issues and some kids are just going to sit on them, internalize them, and never talk about them until they go into therapy later in life. And then they're going to talk about them a lot. So
Exactly.
So, all right. Okay. I will give another general tip, and this is going to be just a mundane one. But it speaks to my heart, and that is get extra help around the house if at all possible. Anticipate that you're going to just be busier when you add a child, regardless of whether the child is coming through birth or adoption, especially in the first 6 months. You know, just cut back on some of the shoulds in your life. Say no to a lot of additional activity. Expect it. Go in and expecting that you're going to need more time with your new and your existing kids, as well as your spouse or partner.
Right. And I would expand that to, make sure you really have engaged your support system, that you've also educated your support system so that they know a little bit more about adoption as well. And I think another nice addition to that general tip is reach out for help when you need it. We are just seeing more and more states embracing post-adoption services being made available for free. There are certainly increasing numbers of mental health professionals who are getting adoption training, and we're seeing more and more people with adoption competency out there. And so don't hesitate to ask for help when you need it, through your own support system or through professionals. It's not impossible to find us. We are out here. We are doing good work. And I know people get frustrated frequently thinking, well, I can't find someone who understands adoption. But we are literally building that professional army throughout the country. So keep asking and find that help.
You are preaching to the choir here with post-adoption support.
I am.
trying. And as far as finding, we have resources on our website, creatingafamily.org, to help you find adoption competent therapists. There are a number of organizations that have lists. We also have a great resource for helping you find an adult adoptee therapist, a therapist that was also an adoptee. So that is at our website, creatingafamily.org. Hover over the word adoption, click on adoption topics, and go down to the bottom under and click on adoption therapy.
Awesome.
Yeah, very, yeah. The last one I would throw out is don't overreact to sibling rivalry. You're going to get some sibling rivalry, and sibling rivalry does not necessarily mean that there is a problem with mixing and matching kids by birth and adoption. It just means that.
Correct.
Yeah. Siblings squabble, siblings fight. That's just how it is.
Yeah. Not only don't overreact, but you normalize it. And that's a part of how relationships grow and shift and change, is sometimes you need conflict. there isn't a relationship out there that sustains itself without conflict. It's literally how we cement with each other that I still care about you and value you, that I'm going to work through this with you. That I'm going to get on the other side of this conflict.
Think of it as a gift to your children. That
it is.
It's a gift. I'll have to keep reminding myself of that. It is a gift to my. It's a gift. Damn it.
It's hard to watch, though. I mean, it is hard to watch when your children aren't getting along.
Yes.
But it is the natural flow of relationships. And so it's not necessarily something that we have to go, oh my God, it's because they're not genetically related, that they're not getting along.
And exactly.
That's probably not the reason.
Yeah, that's what we call, that would be the overreact. Yes, exactly. Yeah. All right, so now we're going to move into specific tips for when you have a child by birth and you are going to adopt after the fact. So you've got children in the family and you're adding to your family through adoption. And we've talked about any of the number of reasons, secondary infertility, a feeling of altruism where a family that has room for another child. We don't feel the need to be genetically connected. You know, we don't feel that's to give birth again. So for whatever reason, you're bringing in a child through adoption, or you're a foster family and one of your foster kids is coming, is available for adoption, and you as a foster parent have been offered the opportunity. So let's now talk about what are some tips that you would give for families who are adding an adopted child once they already have children by birth?
Well, one is timing. I really think about timing in terms of age and stage of your child. What is your child's capacity to participate in this process, to understand the process, to have some input, to be able to have some input? Obviously, if you're planning to do this when they're at a really young age, you can't do a lot of that. So you just need to think about at what point how will I incorporate understanding about how this happened differently when my child is old enough to finally understand it. But certainly worth thinking about is, when is the right time for this? And, you know, this might be a good time to throw this out as, you know, another reason why people sometimes do this. I think we both focused on the positive reasons why people do this, but there is one negative reason that comes up frequently for us. And that is families who come to us and say, well, we have one child, we can't get pregnant again, and we want our child to have a sibling. We want our child to have a friend. We feel like our child will, you know, and for us, that sets off alarm bells, because we can't guarantee that siblings will form a true sibling bond. We can't promise that. We think most of them do, but no guarantees. Mm-hmm. And you need to want this child. It needs to not just be a playmate for your child that's already in the home, because you're going to do the work of parenting, not your mm-hmm. child. Mm-hmm. And what if they don't get along? Mm-hmm. Then what? And what will it mean?
Or the child that will say that, well, my child, my son really wants a sibling. Well, yeah, I mean, but he probably would like a dog too. I mean, you know, kids right. don't really have the concept of what it means to have a sibling uh-huh. and the sharing and uh-huh. all that goes in and all the annoying parts of having a sibling.
Right. And they don't know the same sense of commitment. And so while it might feel good today, then they'll be like, okay, well, now I don't really like this anymore. So yeah. can you go back?
Yeah.
we don't want to be doing that. So
change my mind.
But yeah. that's worth the conversation. And when people come through our doors, they often think that they're telling us a cute reason for why they're doing this by saying, well, we really want it. And we're like, nope, you just sent off alarm bells for us. So we're going to have a whole nother conversation with you. Mm-hmm. But that's relevant. So thinking about, what are you really doing this for? Whose needs are you meeting by engaging in this process? Because what we ultimately need you to do is meet the needs of the child you're adopting, and not have this be about meeting your need only or the need of your child who's already in your home. So really getting clear about why you're doing this and not just about, you know, the age and stage and is it good timing, I think is a great general tip.
Okay. Since we're trading off, I will have one, and that is to prepare the children in the family both for adoption and also to prepare them that they're going to end up having to explain adoption to their friends, because their friends may not well understand what adoption means, and that it's mm-hmm. it's the same as they may experience their friends, depending on their age, of course, of saying, well, he's not your real brother. So explaining for helping prepare your kids for what adoption will mean, for what it means for you as a family, but also prepare them to explain it to their friends. And there's a number of, I am a huge believer in using children's literature as a great conversation starter. And we have a wonderful list of books, the best of the best adoption books for kids, broken out by type of adoption and age of the child. And we include books. We also have a category for preparing children in the family for an adoption. And you can find that at our website, creatingafamily.org. Hover over the word adoption and click on suggested books. There's also a shortened link, which is a bit.ly link, bit.ly/adoptionbooks, with the A and the B both capitalized. So thoughts on that one?
Yeah, and practice with kids what they can mm-hmm. say when people ask them questions. That's the other piece that helps, is not only to give them a heads up, hey, you might get questions, but let's practice how you want to answer. You're probably familiar with CASE's Wise Up program
exactly.
that mm-hmm. teaches kids the different ways in which they might choose to respond, because maybe they don't want to share everything with everyone. And so I think that technique of practicing with kids, of giving permission and normalizing that you aren't required to share everything about our family with everyone who asks. Think about the difference between privacy and secrecy. really important conversation to have with your children, particularly because the sort of nosy questions are frequently around the adopted sibling's birth family information, which shouldn't necessarily be public to a lot of people. And so really helping kids understand that difference of what's private, confidential information versus we're not trying to keep things secret because this is bad. It's just that not everything needs to be shared with everyone. So those are healthy conversations for parents to have and necessary conversations to have with their kids, for sure.
And we think of the Wise Up Power book, which is listed as one of our listed books, one of our favorite books, as being used primarily for adopted kids, which it is, and it's wonderful and was written for them. But I think that when we're talking about children's literature and adoption books, when you bring an adopted child into the family, those same books are very valuable to use with kids in the family.
Absolutely.
Now, I have a question. From your perspective, how much of the information should your existing kids know about the reasons that your new child entering the family through adoption, the reason that he or she was in need of an adoptive placement? In other words, the birth family story.
I think a lot of it's going to depend on age and intellectual capacity, for sure. But I would say basics, not details. I'm a firm believer, our agency teaches that the story is the adoptee's. And they have ownership of that story, ultimately. And so, you know, for sure, the adoptee needs all the information. And then I think other family members get sort of basics in general. And then when the adoptee wants to share the details, they can. Or asking the adoptee, do you mind if your sister or brother knows a bit more about this? And do you want to share it? Or would you like me to share it? Otherwise, I think we need to stick to very basic information, in part because children don't always have the ability to make good choices about what they might say out in public. So we need to be aware of that. And so better to not give them the information, but also have to check in. Are they making something up because they don't have the information and putting that out there as if that's the story? So it's sort of important for parents to talk both ways. Is what do you think the reason is? And if they've made up a story that's six times worse or over the top better in some way than ever would be in reality, that's, you need to correct that, obviously. And some kids will do that. They'll say, well, I figured out that. And I think we also have to check out with our kids, how much did they overhear that we thought we were having a private conversation with our spouse and kids in the house hear things.
They do.
And just own that. You know, if it happened, it happened. If you know a lot more than you ever intended it to, they know it. And now we have to talk about how to be respectful of that information.
Or it's not just overhearing conversations, but over reading documents that are in the house. You leave it sitting out and you think, oh, nobody's going to pick it up. Or it's just sitting here and you're not even, it's just waiting for you to do something and you're not paying attention to the fact of where it is.
Exactly.
Our kids read and pick up almost everything they can and are going to, are the smart ones do. And so there's a lot of information that's out there. All right. Yeah. So now let's give, we're still talking about when we are adding an adopted child and there's kids already in the family. So I'm going to give you a couple of different scenarios. One, what if the, if you're adopting a child past infancy or a, another way, or adopting an older child. Let's talk about some of the specifics, some tips for parents in preparing and blending kids in the family when the child is coming in at an older age. Some thoughts on what parents need to be aware of to make that a successful addition.
Well, inclusion. You know, we're going to have to include the kids in the family in some of the visits as we're getting matched and this process is taking place, include them in, again, basic understanding of what are some of the needs this child's coming in with, what we already know we're going to have to do differently or handle differently or manage differently in order to meet the new child's needs. And then how do we talk? How do we have conversation with this older child who knows what's happening, can talk about it potentially, but might be shy about talking about it, might be unsure whether they can talk about it. And normalizing things like asking about where they've lived before and what's happened to them and where have they been and what have been some of their experiences. a lot of families, I think, come into this thinking, well, I'm going to tell my kid not to ask any questions about where they were because that'll just make this child feel bad. But the child needs to be able to say, I've been living with other people. I've had both positive and negative experiences with other people, birth family, foster families, wherever those places have been. And to act like none of that happened and never allow the child to talk about it with peers, meaning their siblings, their new siblings, isn't really a healthy standard to set. So normalizing and making that okay, and encouraging some conversation about that, and then allowing it to sort of happen naturally. You know, a lot of parents sort of, the kids will ask the more honest question of each other, and then the parent will be like, oh, I can't believe you asked that.
Yeah,
you shouldn't ask that question.
That is so, so true.
Take a deep breath and just see where it goes. Maybe it's going to be okay. And if it's not, it's not. And you step in, you say, hey, I can tell that your question caused a lot of stress or anxiety for him. And let's not talk about that. And let me tend to him and help him calm down, or you know, do some good intentional parenting to sort of settle things down. But sometimes it's fine. Sometimes kids would rather talk to another kid about it than to you. Okay.
Yeah. And you might actually learn something. Just listen to the answer.
Yeah. Sometimes you just want to sit back and listen to their chatter in another room and see where it goes.
Or as you're driving and they're sitting in the back seat of the car.
Yeah. Yeah.
We're all good conversations.
That sort of invisible thing that they think that we're not listening to them.
Yeah. When of course, that's all we're doing.
Exactly.
Another suggestion, another tip for parenting when you're adding a child, past an older child to your family, which has biological kids in it, is to help your existing children anticipate the behaviors your newly adopted child might exhibit. You know, clinging, tantrum, anxiety, crying, food hoarding, just to name a few of the possibilities. And again, I would say we have, as I mentioned, books to help prepare children for the adoption of a sibling. And we have a number of books. There's one that is my absolute favorite, Emma's Yucky Brother by Jean Little. And it's about, it's been a while since I read it, but I believe it's a child. I don't know if he's the adopted child, but a foster child coming in as being adopted. But it's such a good way of helping your kids think through. Now, you can't really 100% prepare them, but it's certainly good if you've done it, made that this is when the first tantrum hits, it's not totally taking them by surprise.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Preparation, 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 right?
Exactly. Exactly. Now, what about if let's a different scenario, we've talked about some when you are adopting an older child. What about if you are adopting transracially? Let's talk about some of the special considerations for the children who are existing in your family already, if the child you're bringing in is a child of a different race.
Yeah, open conversation about what that means. Parents really needing to be comfortable with, you might be okay with this, you might have thought through all the implications of this, and your child, if we give them time and space to be honest, might say, I don't know that I want a brother or sister who looks really different from me. And that might appall you, and you might be like, I thought we were raising you to accept anyone and everyone, and yet sometimes kids can get really super brutally honest and say, yeah, but I don't know that I want that for any number
of reasons. And it may not be that your child, exactly. Think outside the box. I mean, the parent might immediately think, oh my gosh, I'm raising a racist. But in fact, it could be that the child just doesn't want the attention that a conspicuous family is going to bring.
Mm-hmm. You know, most of the time, kids are functioning in the realm of, I don't want my life to be harder.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
you know, I'm not looking for ways for life to be harder.
Yeah.
And so sometimes it's just a matter of that is, yes, it's going to make us stand out. I'm going to have to answer even more questions. But, then the other direction with that is to really look at, what have your children's experiences been with children of other race? Has that been varied and intentional and comfortable and frequent or not? Or do your kids have a group of friends that are already racially diverse or not? Really look at that. I mean, we have that exercise that we do with our families, that bead exercise of, you know, sorting out, what does your circle look like of where you shop, where you go to church, who's in your neighborhood, who's in your house, Mm-hmm. Who do you socialize with? And what does that look like racially? We need to do that with our kids too, because maybe you haven't noticed that your kids actually don't have mm-hmm. a racially diverse group of friends, that you haven't paid attention to the fact that no one that they invite over to the household looks any different from them. Mm-hmm. And so to then expect that child to immediately say, well, yeah, then I'm fine with it, is a lot to ask of children. Mm-hmm. And so sure. we need, whatever we're doing with ourselves as adults to assess that, we need to also look at our children's lives and assess that as well. What mm-hmm. does their classroom look like? What does their soccer team look like? You know, all those things, extracurriculars, mm-hmm. you know, so that we're realistic with ourselves as families about what are really we really asking of our child. Mm-hmm. And for some families, they're like, nope, we want to make this different. We want to be different, and we're going to be different. And we're going to start doing it now, even ahead of adding this child. And we're going to intentionally add children that look different to diversify our lives. I think if you're really going into it well-educated about that, that intentionality doesn't always mean a negative, but you need to really be sure about that.
It start beforehand.
Yeah, we can't always say we just want our kids to not be racist and we think we've not raised them that way and just know that it's true. You know, under the best of circumstances, we yes. might not have hit the mark.
And it's not fair to bring a child into your family if your real intent right. is to make certain that the kids in your family, I don't think many people do this, but to show off your lack of racism, that is not a good reason yeah. to adopt a child.
No, the adoptee cannot be your statement to the world.
No, exactly. It's a poor statement.
That's not a fair burden. Not a fair burden.
It's not a fair burden. It's also not a particularly good statement, because that you can be a racist no. and still adopt a child
Absolutely.
Of a different race. We have a wonderful resource, 4 Tips to Raising Anti-Racist Kids. And the thing there's many good tips. There's 4 good tips in that. But the other thing it does is provide a phenomenal list of children's books. One of the things that you can intentionally do, I mentioned earlier, I love using children's literature as a stepping stone, both for conversation and introducing concepts. And they're one of the simplest things you could do long before, when you're first even an inkling in your eye that you might want to do this, is to start introducing literature into your children's lives that have diverse characters. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there's some phenomenally great literature that has children where the main characters, but also children in heroic, not always children who are needing help. You know, so there's
right. Yes.
It's important to think through diversity as to where the character that is diverse is, mm-hmm. where they are in the story. So all of those are things to think about prior to adopting transracially.
Absolutely. And really, in this day and age, there's no excuse for not educating yourself. There are a lot of resources out there around how to really tackle being anti-racist in yourself and in your family and raising your children, and loads of tips on being intentional about that. Mm-hmm. And I love what you said about who the characters are in the story. Mm-hmm. That's so important. We forget that, as well as paying attention to how stereotyped was the character yes. in the story.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And that's not going to be okay. Mm-hmm. If the only, what they see in literature is a stereotype of their mm-hmm. race. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, and families need to think about that. Mm-hmm. They can't just pick a book and say, well, I saw there was a black character in it, so it's fine. Mm-hmm. No, you need to look at, what does that character do? How are they described? How are they dealt with? How are they managed? How are they a part of the story? And then assess whether it's a good book to have.
And if all this feels too overwhelming, then that's a really good indicator that maybe adopting a child of another race isn't the best thing for your family. There's no,
right.
It's not for everyone. And so And I would also throw out there that the suggestions about diversifying the literature your children are experiencing should go regardless of whether you're going to. That should apply regardless of whether we're mm-hmm. you're even thinking about adopting, but you wouldn't be listening to this if that wasn't yeah. something you were thinking about.
Yeah, our world would be a different world if we were all raising our children, no matter whether we were same race families or not.
Amen.
With that intentionality.
Yes.
That would be amazing.
It would be amazing. I say this all the time, but This show would not exist without our partner agencies, and these are agencies who believe in our mission, and our mission is to educate and support adoptive and foster families, and they not only believe in it, but they put their money behind it, and we are so appreciative, and we hope you are as well. One such agency is Vista Del Mar. They are a licensed nonprofit adoption agency with over 65 years of experience helping to create families. They offer home study only services as well as full service infant adoptions, international home studies, and post-adoption work for international families, as well as foster to adopt programs. You can find them online at their website, vistadelmar.org/adoption. And we thank them for their support. All right, now I'm going to shift to the last, we're going to give tips. These are parenting tips for if you are blending children by birth and adoption. We've given some general tips, and then we gave some tips when your biological children came first and you were adopting a child after the fact. Now we want to talk about tips for if your adopted kids come first and you are giving birth after the fact. Mm-hmm. So thoughts on anything you would tell families when this is happening? Mm-hmm.
So this is going to come from my adoptee heart, as well as what I know about adult adoptees, as my primary tip. You have got to be comfortable really tending to your child's fears that may be spoken or unspoken, that you are finally getting what you really wanted.
Yeah.
We believe as adoptees that you really wanted a child you gave birth to. I don't care how fabulous our families are. I don't care how well loved and connected we are. We still believe you really wanted a child you gave birth to, and now you're getting it.
Mm-hmm.
So what does that mean for me? And so there needs to be very intentional conversation about your capacities for unconditional love and acceptance, no matter what, and attending to those fears, normalizing them, giving voice to them if your child's comfortable voicing it. And just saying, I get that you might think that. I understand where that comes from. And it's okay that you're having those thoughts. I'm going to keep consistently telling you that that's not true. I was not only looking to have a child by birth. And I don't only love or love more a child that I gave birth to. This will be a different experience for me. I definitely will have some new feelings I haven't had before. It doesn't diminish what I have for you. I think if a family can do that, if parents can do that, and be truly sincere about that, that will go a long way. Because I just don't think that there's an adoptee out there who isn't in some way, shape, or form going, well, now you got what you wanted. Mm-hmm. You didn't really want me.
Well, and the hard part is that there is an element of truth. If you have been, not always, but if you have been in fertility treatment and tried for 3 years and went through and fertility treatment didn't work and you adopted as a result, the child wasn't necessarily second best, but you did try for 3 years to get pregnant.
Right.
And so you have to, it's not an illogical thing. I think you almost have to say, yeah, I thought that is the way that I always imagined growing my family. That's, you know, you grow up and you get pregnant and you have a baby, but that's not the way it happened for me. And my love won't change. And you know, you have to be comfortable with the fact that your child is not coming from total left field.
Right, right. It's not an illogical fear at all. And I think it's also okay to say, you know, I think I might have at one time thought that I would have been happier with a child by birth, but then I met you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great message to give a kid.
Yeah.
You know, and I can't imagine my life without you now. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine what that would have been like. And I'm so thrilled that it happened this way.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fabulous message to give, but you have to give it. You can't assume your child's going to intuit that from you.
No,
So you have to really be comfortable saying it. And saying it out loud and saying it frequently. Your child will have a lot of anxiety about what this means for them and their relationship to you now that you are finally able to have a child by birth.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is to include them in this process, again, based on age and stage. But, you know, adoptees feel very disconnected from the process of pregnancy often because we miss our pregnancy stories. We miss our birth stories. We don't have a lot of connection to that idea that we were part of someone, and because we're not hearing those stories. So to the extent that you can include them in that, it increases their understanding about how babies are conceived and how they're grown in the body and how births happen and, you know, the wide range of emotions that people have around that. And expect that your child will start thinking about, well, what happened with my birth mom? What do you think that was like for her? I see you being really happy being pregnant. I see you being really excited. Do you think she was excited about me? I don't think she was, because she wasn't ready for me and, or was, you know, in crisis or, you know, I mean, we know that about our stories. And so we're going to have those conversations with our child as our pregnancy advances, for sure.
And we've said this before, but the fact if your child is not asking the question does not necessarily reflect that they're not having the thoughts. Some kids ask questions, some don't. And sometimes they don't feel comfortable. And sometimes it's just by temperament, they're not question askers. But that doesn't mean they're not thinking about it. So you can't rely as a parent. It's you're taking the cheating way out to say, well, I'll talk about it if they bring it up. That's not how it works. As a parent, you have the obligation to bring it up. You've just said that every adoptee you've ever spoken with has that fear. So there you got it, guys. From the horse's mouth. Your kid has this, period. Regardless of what you think, your kid is worried about it, period.
Absolutely.
100%. Well, Rebecca Ricardo, thank you so much for talking with us today about combining kids by birth and adoption. This has been great. I truly appreciate your time.
Oh, thank you for having me. I've enjoyed having this conversation. I love talking about adoption and anything that puts out into the community, tips and helpful ideas and suggestions. And I'm all about doing that, because we've got to grow and learn and educate ourselves if we're going to do this better. So thank you for having me.
Let me remind everyone that this show, the information given in this interview, is general advice. To understand how it applies to your specific situation, you need to talk with your adoption or foster care professional. Did you enjoy today's podcast? Would you tell a friend about what you learned when you listen to the Creating a Family podcast? We love strengthening and inspiring more families to raise strong and healthy kids, and we could really use your help by spreading the word about this podcast. So let your friends know. Most people find out about podcasts through their friends. So please be a friend and let your friends know. Thanks for joining us today, and I will see you next week.